Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to Book Cheat, the book club podcast where I've read the book so you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnicky, and on each episode of this show we look at one of the classics. And joining me to look at such a classic this week from Sanspans Radio, returning guests Joel Zammit and Jackson Bailey.
How you doing?
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello indeed.
Yes.
Thank you for returning to the library.
Anytime.
Never refer to it as that.
That's so good, though.
That's so good. If you can make people imagine a gigantic, like in Beauty and the Beast.
I went Beauty and the Beast library, you?
Yes, that's exactly
right. Beach library. Beast.
Yeah. I'm talking like three levels.
Yeah. With big, wonderful staircase, not staircases, what do you call them? Ladders.
Yeah.
That slide along
slide
the books.
Around. Oh.
Oh, my goodness me, the dream.
Now I'm thinking like one of them FBI where they have all like the files and they have those big wheels you got to kind of clank.
Oh, yeah, they're good.
And then in, I don't know if you've seen anyone ever be killed in one of those things.
I mean, I'm shocked if I haven't.
But that's a big fear of mine. That's why they are banned from the library.
That's fair.
You understand.
No one would find you until they needed to search that specific area. It's terrifying.
It's a rational fear.
So you'd spin the wheel and separate you half each. Oh my God, it's Dave. He got trapped in here.
He got crushed by books. So many hardcovers.
What's great about that is that because they're shelved, somebody, if they wheeled the one next to you and taking out a book with your face, like on the other side looking
just
through.
Pressed against it.
Oh my God, Dave.
Help me. Oh, let's just put that book back. Don't need this.
That's very scary. That's a fear you've given me now.
It's scary. It is so, so scary. Off air, we were talking about how my mum is a librarian.
Mm. Yeah.
Which I talk about with all my friends. And I'm proud. I'm proud of it.
It's cool.
Yeah. Right?
My mum was a bus driver.
Really? Yeah. There you go.
That's cool.
But I hadn't thought about this in a long time. At her library, there were those metal things we're talking about.
Oh,
I was too scared to go in them as a kid.
Terrorist. Fair enough.
Get something out. Like, go. Can we get some picture books in there? I'm like, absolutely not.
At library, so they still have that like filing cabinet where you pulled out and you had little file cards that you kind of look through.
I haven't worked at a library.
Is that a thing that
you know who has?
Exists?
My mum.
Yeah.
Oh!
Which I'd love to tell.
They're on the phone. Do they still have them or did that just become computerized?
I'm assuming it's computerized.
Yeah, sadly.
Someone lost a job.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, sadly, the whole library is going that way.
Oh, yeah.
That's sad. The death of the library.
You can't You can't crush people between two computers.
There's two iPads.
Either side of the head.
Well, thanks so much for coming back. Mm. We had you last on the Frankenstein episode.
Ah, yes.
It was very good.
Which was well received, I must say.
Oh,
so
that's
thank
good
you.
To
appreciate,
hear.
Appreciate you guys coming back. And often before I get into the book we're going to talk about, I ask if you guys have been reading anything lately.
Well, I've been reading Loch Lomora. It's like a fantasy series. It's called The Gentleman Bastard Sequence. I'm up to book, I want to say, two of maybe currently three that are out. It's taken me a while to read because I realize I'm a slow reader if I have access to the internet. I went away like over Christmas and I was like maybe a quarter through the first book and I just powered through it because I was like, I'm not really, you know, I'm going to like just turn off all like internet social media thing. I'm on a beach. I'm going to read. I loved it. And as soon as I got back to the real world, I'm like, it's just next to my bed gathering dust. I look at it occasionally. I'm like, I should read that. And then I just like scroll through Instagram being like, I don't care about any of
all
this.
All of this is bad content. If only I was reading that book.
That book seems so interesting. I was having a good time. He's becoming a pirate. This, though, Instagram. Ooh, look at that food that I'm never going to eat. Yay! A recipe, you say? Nah.
The saddest part of Instagram for me is when it gets to the thing and says, you're all caught up. That's it. You put it down for 5 minutes and you go... See what else is out there? Two new posts?
Yeah.
You're all caught up. And you're like, oh, no.
What else is there?
There's that book, Gathering Dust.
Yeah. I've been rereading for the millionth time, a book called In Search of Prehistoric Survivors by a zoologist named Carl Shuker, or Shuker, I don't know how to pronounce it.
I prefer Shuker.
Yeah, Shuker's nice.
It's S-H-U-K-E-R, so that sounds like Shuker to me.
Shuker, yeah.
Which is a book, it's a non-fiction book about various possible prehistoric survivors. So like, hey, people are talking about this animal that they say that they claim is mythological or that no one's ever found. It could be this. This animal fits the description. It's a book I have on the kitchen table and read while eating. It's like my eating book.
Yeah.
I sit down and I read like a chapter or like a couple of sections.
I've been meaning to ask you this for several months now because we end up because we move around a lot of the table, etc. So when you leave it open, do you want to keep a marker there? Because I usually just put something there as I close it, then put it somewhere else.
That's funny because I've never gone back to the page. That must mean that if I went through it, there'd be hundreds of bookmarks. Because it's separated into for example, they'll be talking about possible prehistoric mammal survivors. And then they'll have that separated further into in South America, some of the native people talk about an animal. They call them a pinguary, which, if you read the description, kind of sounds like a giant sloth, which no longer exists, but did once. So that'll be one section, and that's what I'll read while eating. And then once I finish with that, I could turn to any... I've read the book so many times. I could turn to any... I like this book so much that this is actually the reprint he released 2 years ago that is the same book but with extended and updated stuff for the 2010s, because I think the last one was came out in 1999. It's a great book. It's good to read whilst eating.
This is a glowing review. You guys do live together, so there's obviously not much conversation going on over dinner.
It's because I will have dinner usually around about 6 o'clock, 6:30, Jack?
Anytime, who knows?
Really? Have you had dinner now?
Yes, we went out for dinner, but I had to think about it. But I've had dinner at midnight quite a few times
last
recently.
Last night, I'm pretty sure I saw you just eating noodles from a pot at midnight.
Yes, that was. I couldn't be bothered eating, and I felt sick. So,
did you bring the book to dinner tonight?
No, I didn't. I should have brought it with me, though, and just ignored you. We were out somewhere, just not looked. It's a big, thick book, too.
Yeah.
That would have been good. But yeah, that's what I've been reading.
Well, a glowing review there. Well, what I've been reading, I'm about to tell you all about it. And I've gone with, this is something new for Book Cheat. Usually I'll pick a play or a novel and focus on that. But this week I decided to go for not one, but two separate stories by the same author.
Ooh.
And we are going to talk about Edgar Allan Poe.
Melon head himself.
All right.
A giant head.
He's got quite the face.
It was medically impressive.
All I really... Is he the one that they think got killed because people got him drunk and made him vote a few times and then beat him up?
Yeah, he died because of voter fraud or something.
Is that right?
It's very mysterious.
Yeah.
People still speculate to this day how he died.
And isn't that other Poe mystery, the Poe ghoster, the sniff Poe ghost? Somebody leaves something at his grave every year and no one knows who it is. The Snow Poe Ghoster?
The Snow Poe Ghoster.
What? People are leaving snow on his grave every year?
All I know is that it rhymes and ends with possibly ghoster.
Edgar Allan
Poe Mysteries. No, it's got nothing to do with ghosts.
Like a poltergeist?
No. It's got the Poe Flow Ghost.
Poe Flow.
The Plofo Poster.
The Someone leaves the fish row.
Mystery on Edgar Allan Poe grave. What's happened when you've searched
Here we go, here we go. For decades, a mysterious man left three roses and cognac on Edgar Allan Poe's grave to mark the anniversary of the writer's birth.
Okay.
But after the visitor, dubbed the Poe Toaster...
Ah! There it is! Because he was toasting with the cognac. That makes
Poe
sense.
Toaster.
Yeah, I don't know where I got...
Doesn't really rhyme heaps.
No.
It seems that he stopped visiting 2 years in a row, and that's...
in 2012, so people were freaking out.
The Poe Rightfully so. What happened to the Poe toaster?
Well, we've all been wondering.
I mean, like, if it was a constant in your life and it just one day disappeared, I would be worried. Distressed. It's an omen.
It's funny, one of those mysteries where you'd think the overall response would be, who cares? Like, someone's been leaving cognac and Edgar Allan Poe's grave. So,
good.
Cool.
Can I have some?
Yeah, basically, I think people are annoyed that they can't steal cognac the day after his anniversary of his birth.
Also, you know that the revelation of that mystery is going to be some guy.
Someone that didn't even really know him.
He's a fan. Who cares? Yeah. Good. Anyway.
Surely that'll be easy to... Just wait.
You'd think.
That's a mystery you can solve by just waiting near the grave on the day.
Clearly it's harder than that because no one's done it.
No one.
I mean...
Come on, damn it.
It just seems so easy to solve, if you cared.
Jack and Edgar Allan Poe's coffin was shaped differently because of his big head.
At the top, it bulged out.
His head was huge.
How big a head are we talking about?
Like the size of a big pumpkin. Look it up.
Right, I'll show you, and then I will post a photo of Edgar Allan Poe.
Like the size of a whole melon mounted atop a man.
Is it big because he himself had maybe a small, frail frame?
I don't know.
Oh, what a melon.
It's so big.
As a man with a large forehead myself, I mean.
It's not just the forehead. He's got big cheeks. Have you got a full body shot? It's like a pin.
There you go. I think it's a combination. He needs a thinner neck.
Yeah.
Here he is standing next to a skeleton, which is not helping him.
Look at that big melon.
Anyway, vindication feels nice.
Wow. First the Poe toast, now this. You are an Edgar Allan Poe expert. I'm glad I got you.
What do you know about Edgar Allan Poe, Jackson? Snow Poe ghost, big hat. That's it.
So we're going to talk about two most famous works, arguably. Mm-hmm. The short story, The Telltale Heart.
Oh, classic.
And then the poem, The Raven.
Ooh, all right.
But first of all, just a little bit of context for everyone who's not as au fait with the giant head. Edgar Allan Poe was born in Boston in 1809. The writer had a profound influence on the short story.
Cool.
He wrote lots of short stories, but also was a big critic of them. So it shaped it in that way. Sadly, his life was full of tragedy. He was born to actors, and as if that wasn't bad enough.
Poe, that's
poor
rough.
Man.
He was orphaned at the age of two.
Wow. What? Was there an acting accident? What happened?
His mum died and his dad ran away.
Oh, that's sad. He's not orphaned then.
Yeah, that was more abandoned.
He's just like an absentee papa. Yeah. That's not an orphan.
Look, he's got a dead mum. Okay, sad, yes, but not orphaned.
50%
he's still got one
orphaned,
of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on.
I mean,
come
technically,
on.
But dad is not coming back.
Well,
that's,
yeah.
That's true.
He's still waiting for him to come back.
In practice.
He'll be back. He was raised by, but never formally adopted by, John and Frances Ellen, with whom he had a pretty tense relationship and lost contact with after he was expelled from school.
Oh, that's how tense.
Old. Raised that's, but not adopted is a
tense.
Bad phrase.
Hey, I know you've taken me in as one as your own, but you reckon maybe one day I could call you mum and dad? Like,
no,
you know, maybe
not in a million years.
Okay,
kid.
That's cool. I was just spitballing.
The very idea.
I am not signing anything.
I'm not putting my name down on any paper.
Would you take my name? No, thank you.
I will not leave a paper trail.
He mainly paid the bills throughout his life as a magazine editor, but was almost always poor. At the age of 27, he married his first cousin, Elizabeth.
Classic.
Which,
classic. Oh, that... look, hey, cousins, that's all right.
It's all right. It's fine to marry a cousin.
Okay, but she was 13 years old.
I rescind my previous statement.
It's not good. It's not good anymore.
Please don't marry your underage cousin.
They stayed married for 11 years until her death from tuberculosis.
Oh, boy.
I told you it was a tragic life.
Well, Poe, don't marry your 13-year-old cousin. Like, I'm not blaming it on him, but, like, I don't feel bad for her, not Poe.
Yeah.
Poe himself died a couple of years later at the age of 40 from a mysterious illness or mysterious circumstances, which we were talking about earlier. But since his death, he's influenced generations of writers. Very influential. And as well as the short story, he's also sometimes referred to as the father of detective fiction.
I didn't know that. Wasn't there a TV series based around his work starring Kevin Bacon as a cop, maybe? and the serial killer did a lot of Poe-based crime slash cult
What
murders.
Is Poe-based crime? Kill a man with a crow. Bash someone to death with your giant head. I don't know what Poe-based crime is.
Is it called The Following?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember The Following.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon and another handsome man.
I didn't know that it was based on Edgar Allan Poe.
It was
Kevin Bacon is handsome.
Yeah, he is handsome, but Kevin there was Bacon another handsome...
Oh, I think he might have been guy. Looks like he's a literature lecturer.
Yeah, he's the handsome one. What's so his? Who's
talks
he?
Talks about...
Who plays him? All I know is he's handsome. He's got dark hair.
Carol, let's have a look. Who's...
Yeah, Carol.
Carol. Great name.
Very.
Sorry, Mid Savage, getting horny over here. Getting horny for The Following. I don't know.
Like, it was not a good series.
Who played Carol? Tell us.
Just, yeah, there was just handsome boy. Yeah.
James Purefoy?
Yeah, him.
Wow. That's a great last. Purefoy?
Yeah.
It was Mark Antony in Rome, the TV show.
Yeah.
Ah.
I don't know. I don't know who he is. He just looks cute.
Yeah, he's a good looking guy, but actors, am I right?
Yeah. Raise a kid.
Yeah.
Half orphan him.
Okay, so that's the background of our guy, Edgar Allan Poe.
Okay.
Now let's talk about the Telltale Heart.
Yes.
Cool.
What do you guys know? Do you know,
I kind of think I know it, but I think I also often get the Telltale Heart confused with that story about a woman who murders her husband with a leg of lamb and then makes the cops eat the leg of lamb.
That other famous short story.
That other famous short story, you know, cop ham.
Short story where a woman kills her husband with a leg of lamb. And then she makes the cops eat the murder weapon.
No murder weapon, no crime, baby. That's how it exists.
That's
Can't
a story.
Pin me.
That is, it's got similar shades to the Telltale Heart.
Yes, I can.
Is she guilty?
It may also have been a real thing that happened.
Oh, wow, that makes it way worse.
I just don't know. But anyway, they mix in my brain.
Are you thinking about that person who, like, killed the husband and then, like, served it up to the kids?
No. Killed him with a leg of lamb.
Made the cops eat the
ham. Or a ham hock or something. Made the cops eat it. And the cops ate the murder weapon. No murder weapon, no crime. God, I hope you
can
find
this leg of ham tastes a little bit like a man's head.
If I've made this story up, that's great, but I swear it's real. Yeah, that was bad, though, starting and seeing the blank stares in your face.
I can't find it. I'm so sorry. Maybe we'll...
Anybody listening, please.
Let us know.
Help this drowning man.
I'm also looking up... People often suggest books, and I forgot to check if anyone suggested Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
Basically, so The Telltale Heart is a short story first published in 1843, and has since gone on to be one of the most famous short stories in history, to the point when I Googled famous short story. Oh. It was the number one result.
Oh, man.
That's why
the
sort of,
most famous short story.
That's why I came up with it. But someone said, this is John Wilkinson from Royal Oak in Michigan suggested that I could do a couple of famous Edgar Allan Poe short stories.
There
so thank
you
so much.
Perfect.
It's your dream come true.
You're welcome. So all I really know about the Telltale Heart is the episode of The Simpsons.
Yes.
Where Wookiees are involved. You broke my Wookiee.
Yeah, that's right. That's they have our diorama Rama.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And everyone has to create a book-based diorama.
Yes.
And Nelson Munns has the Grapes of Wrath.
Uh-huh.
Here's the grapes, here's the wrath. He hits them with a hammer.
That's right. What
vintage
a good
Simpsons.
Show. That's great. That's wonderful.
And we'll come back. I've actually got a little bit about that Simpsons episode at the end, so we can come back. Let's put it in context with the original here. It was first published in January 1843 in the inaugural issue of The Pioneer, a literary and critical magazine.
Ooh.
Short-lived. Maybe the only one.
Do they still exist? I assume no.
I went down to my local Mag Nation. Could I find one?
Published in Boston.
Okay.
So I'll give you the... give you the story of the Telltale Heart.
All right, I'm excited. Mm-hmm.
Now, the opening line of the Telltale Heart is, quote, true, nervous, very, very dreadfully nervous, I had been and am. But why will you say that I am mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them, end quote.
Ooh.
Our tale is told by an unnamed narrator confessing to us a crime, which they told us they did quite calmly, and they're very, very keen to stop us from thinking that they are mad. Almost to the point where you go, okay, buddy, it's weird that you keep bringing that up.
If you just brought this up casually, let me make the decision.
Yeah.
Why do you think I'm mad? I'm not mad.
I'm not mad. Just did a crime. So, don't worry about it.
It's pretty cool if you were to think about it.
Yeah, that's if you're going to, I did a crime and it rolled, I'm going to be like, okay. Cool, hey, tell me more.
Who just did a crime and has two thumbs?
This guy's, this guy's all right.
Well, basically, he brings it up so much, he doth protest too much.
Oh, look out.
The disease he was referring to in the opening line I just read could be over acuteness of the senses. He doth hear and see too much, methinks.
Oh my. Easy now. Oh,
it's a book podcast. Guys, we're trying to make it highbrow. He goes on to say, quote, "It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night."
Okay, a bit obsessive.
But not mad.
Not mad. Just can't stop thinking about this idea.
I feel like, is the narrator the kind of person that if you suggested maybe that they might be a little bit, mad, would they just fly off with the handle and try and hit me?
And prove they're mad?
Yes. Until I find out what this crime is, I'm going to imagine the thing he keeps thinking about is opening a chain of spaghetti restaurants.
I'm not mad.
People love spaghetti. I'm thinking about this day and night. I must make a spaghetti restaurant.
Well, I'm so sorry to disappoint you. What his brain has conceived there is killing a man he lives with and works for.
Okay.
Hang on. No ideas.
The relationship is a bit vague, so you could sort of make it podcasty. And we don't know too many details about either man.
Okay, good. I'm now sus.
What we are told is that the narrator conceived killing the other man, who is old, always treated him well, is wealthy, but our killer isn't interested in that.
Okay.
The only motive we are given is the old man's eye. Oh. His eye looked a bit like a vulture's eye. Pale, blue, and with a film over it.
Did he only have one eye?
Yeah, the other eye's fine. He loves the other eye.
It's weird to specify one eye, not eye.
Yeah. He didn't mention which one, but at least one of them pisses him off.
Annoys the hell out of him.
Sounds like a faraway circus. I think I've read this. It's all coming back to me. Yeah, the eye.
The weird. So he has to stand on him on one side, I imagine. Yeah. The good eye.
It's great if, as he talks to me, he puts a hand up to block that eye. Now I can pay attention.
Yeah. I bought him an eye patch, but he never wore it. I feel he's just slighting me.
Every time the old man looks at him with the eye, it makes his blood run cold. So he thought the easiest way to deal with that was to kill the man so we can't look at him anymore.
I guess that works. He's right.
I mean, it's a solution.
Yeah, there's logic there somewhere.
Look, thinking outside the box.
Pop out his eye, then you can keep working with him.
When he's sleeping, so he doesn't know.
Well, he's very keen to point out that we might think he's mad for this, but he argues against that by saying, "Would a madman do this?" He explains his method.
Okay.
His method was to be very nice during the day to his victim.
Sure.
Okay,
so
fair enough. So
we suspect a thing.
Yeah.
Overly nice.
Yeah.
Now it's suspicious.
Suspiciously nice.
Yeah.
You weren't a great guy before.
Yeah, so a little bit, malicious, but all right.
Okay, well, yeah, sure.
So it's nice during the day. Then at night, he would undo the latch on the sleeping man's door at midnight and then slowly sneak his head into the bedroom. Mm-hmm. But not just slowly.
Okay.
Ridiculously slowly. He claims it took him an hour to move his head into the, like, through the door.
Okay, that's something a crazy person would do. Yes, 100% yes. Crazy.
I just said, would a crazy man
do this?
Would a crazy man do this and then slowly moving your head into the room?
Like, to the point, it's moving so slow, I imagine you can't even notice it moving.
You could only see it if it was sped up like in a documentary about plants.
Like a time-lapse camera.
Moving into the room.
Like a butterfly has its whole entire life and he hasn't even moved.
I don't think I could move that slow.
Me neither. I want to try to
take an hour to move my head into the door. I'm going to try
and move my finger very slowly as we go. But I keep wanting to rush it.
Like, if I try and move my finger really slowly, it just starts shaking.
Yeah, same.
And is he leading with his like forehead as well? Like, you know, how is he going?
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine Eddie Allen Poe's big hairline.
Yeah. And it's great if you imagine going through the doorway and then boom on either side. And then he has to slowly back up.
So it's like an hour. Oh, me again.
Damn it. Rats, damn it.
So he's sneaking in, which brings us to a fantastic line, even better out of context. Quote, "Oh, you would have laughed so much to see how cunningly I thrust it in."
I would have laughed.
That's true.
Damn, he's cunning.
That's a cunning thrust.
With the cunning thrust, he had a lantern with him, which was covered over. Mm-hmm. Obviously not to attract attention.
Classic.
But once he got inside the door, which I imagine if the head took an hour, the body's taken another.
What I keep
hours.
Thinking is coming in and then getting your whole body in and then seeing the distance to the bed. Being like, by the time I reach him, the sun's going to be coming up.
So now it's about, okay, what's 1 a.m.? All right, that's oh my nice God. To know.
It's 1 a.m. and then he's inside. He opens up his lantern so a tiny stream of light could come through and he aims it at the man's eye.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Sadly, he couldn't see the vulture's eye because the man was asleep.
Sure, makes sense.
Okay. Eyes closed. And because it wasn't looking at him, he didn't have his murderous rage. Mm-hmm. So he'd look, check, and quietly leave. It doesn't say how long it would take. But I imagine it's another two hours in.
Oh, my God.
So is that just like, I'm going to look, just going to check in on him. Open it up. All right, his eyes covered. Good. Yeah. I can go to sleep.
All right.
It's basically someone on grade five camp making sure everyone's asleep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You guys sleeping in there? All good.
Brought back so many memories.
Yes, faking being asleep.
Yeah. It's like, you get sleeping there? And then there's the of everybody like getting tight in your sleeping bag and trying to stay as still as possible. Yeah.
Trying to fake like that knock just woke you up.
Oh, what's happening?
I'm not playing Pokemon under the covers.
He did this for 7 nights in a row.
Oh, wow. What little sleep he must have got.
Eyes always closed.
Yeah. Like, I mean, look.
While he is asleep.
I mean, a madman wouldn't do that 7 days in a row, methodical.
This guy sounds like he's on the ball.
Got his faculties with
him. I take issue with you calling him a madman because how many times have I told him he's not?
That's what I'm saying. A madman wouldn't do this. Yeah. Yes. I agree with you. I agree.
I was going to say, because.
This is very sound of mind.
That's the one message Edgar's. Giving us here. He's not mad.
He's just a guy. Yeah. Just a regular,
Joe.
Everyday Joe.
It's a regular Joe that opens the door to his boss's room every night when he's sleeping and takes an hour to wobble his head through.
I do that. I do that to your room at night.
Yeah, it's fine.
Poke my head in. Good. And then slowly come out again. Every night. Every damn night.
His eyes closed. Yeah, good.
Good.
He's just a man standing in front of another man, checking that his eye is closed.
Exactly.
Nothing wrong with that.
On the eighth night, however, again, our narrator snuck into the room of his master, but this time his master woke up. Possibly, this is written, because the narrator chuckled to himself.
At what?
Evilly.
What has become funny that wasn't several nights previous?
Maybe it took him like an hour and a bit. And he was like,
I like to think he was having a moment of introspection where he was like, this is pretty funny. What am I doing?
If anyone knew about this, this is pretty funny. But rather than backing out of the room after the laugh and the guy waking up, he stayed still, knowing that the man couldn't see him in the pitch black room.
Okay.
Just as he was about to open his lantern to do his nightly optometrist test.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The man yelled out, "Who's there?" But not feeling conversational, our guy just stood there completely still for another hour.
That's terrifying.
Like a lizard.
That's the scariest part of this story so far.
The man in the bed sat upright this whole time, but didn't leave his bed, didn't turn the light on.
Sure.
Didn't light a candle or anything. He just, after an hour, let out a long groan.
I was imagining like a, this guy again.
An hour.
I would go back to sleep fairly quickly if I didn't think there was someone there.
Theory.
Yeah.
I just don't think this guy understands time.
Yeah, okay.
I think what he thinks is an hour. You know how he over-exaggerates a lot of things?
Yeah. Are you claiming that he's... mad?
No, I wouldn't dare. I would not dare suggest such a thing.
He's not mad, he might just be an idiot.
Because, you know, it's just like, you know, oh, I took a shortcut to work, or I went through this door instead. It's like, how long did you say? Oh, like 10 minutes, when in reality, maybe like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Maybe so I reckon he was like, it took me so long. It took me an hour to walk through that door, when in reality, maybe a minute. Maybe.
10 max.
Maybe. Just saying. Right, well. And so, like, old mate was up for an hour. Really? 30 seconds.
Exactly.
Yeah, before. Who's there? Because you don't go, who's there, sit up for an hour, and then go.
Back to bed.
So he's just groaned, still not put off. Our storyteller opens his lantern and directs the light directly onto the man's eye. And this time, it's open.
Oh, boy.
Dull blue with a hideous veil over the top of it.
Oh, gross.
Yuck.
It shocked him.
Is that a cataract?
Yeah, I think so. Sorry. He's just a bit blind.
Yeah. It just sounds like a cataract.
And it shocked him to the core, this cataract. And then he started to hear a horrid sound to go along with his horrid visual. He could hear the man's heart beating loudly like a drum.
Wow, that's a big heart.
Yeah. He had a big heart and a bad eye.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, what a fella.
Bad vision. He stood frozen with the lantern still directed onto his prey's eye. And then the beating of the heart got louder and louder, as well as faster and faster. It really freaked out our storyteller, but he stood still for minutes with the sound pulsating in his ears. What do you think?
Seconds.
Ooh. 3 or 4 seconds.
Yeah, 3 or 4 seconds.
3 or 4 seconds. And honestly, kind of maybe look, mate, sounds like your heart.
Yeah, just is saying, it his heart?
Just sounds like
is that
your,
the twist?
Your heart beating in your body that you're hearing because the blood, because you're excited you're going to kill a man.
Maybe there's someone just drumming in the next room. We don't know. Someone's like, yeah, time to start.
Well, it grew so loud that he worried that the neighbours would hear it.
Okay.
Imagine if the neighbours rang the cops. About a loud heart. Keep it down in there.
You got a noise complaint. One of you this living just pretty loud.
Sounds like a little bit of an idiot. He just doesn't quite understand that sounds maybe that are coming from your own body that are close to maybe your ears aren't heard elsewhere. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
If he's like, imagine he got like a set of earphones, yeah. Put them in, he's like, man, people are going to be so mad when they hear how loud these are.
If he's listening to music on the train, he's like, I'm so sorry, everyone. I must be so loud.
Then, quote, the old man's hour had come. With a loud yell, I threw open the lantern and leapt into the room. He shrieked once only. In an instant, I dragged him to the floor and pulled the heavy bed over him. End quote.
What?
Okay. With that, I assume he crushed the man to death with his own bed.
What a murder weapon.
What a way to go. I don't know if it's the mattress.
Just don't think a bed.
Like the whole, you know, the four posters are coming down on top of him.
How frail is this old man?
That's what I keep imagining is that, like, a bed has, like, legs. Yeah. So, like, did he pick up a leg and drop it on his heart? Like, what did he do there?
I think he just kind of rolled him over.
He pulled the whole thing on top of him.
Yeah. That's a mattress. That's a mattress from a man.
This is a man who's had 8 nights to plan this. That's and the best plan. He could come up with is pull the bed on top of him.
Bring a knife.
Just even bring a knife. It's like shocking. In the moment he was like, oh my God, how am I going to actually do this?
I was just doing an eye check. I didn't expect murder.
Our narrator, who's now a confirmed killer, made sure the man was dead by feeling for his heart.
Sure.
And was instantly relieved that the eye could no longer trouble him.
Too easy. He did it. Oh, good job.
Well done, mate.
And if you're thinking you're mad because he's not. Just killed a man with a bed.
He sorted it out.
I mean, he's efficient. He's resourceful.
Let me put your mind at ease.
I think
anyone at home is thinking he's mad. Quote, if you still think me mad, you will think so no longer when I describe the wise precautions I took for the concealment of the body.
Okay.
First of all, I dismembered the corpse.
Clever.
Sound.
It's a great
clever
first move.
I'm not crazy, but I did chop off his head, legs, and arms.
Yes.
Well, look,
yes,
I'm glad that he did. You know, I feel like if you're going to dispose of a body, that has got to be step one. You can't be thinking about that down the track. You're trying to get it in a hole and you're like, wait.
Maybe step one, maybe laying down a tarp first.
Oh, that's a good
point.
Because,
again, a lot of blood.
Well, he's not mad. It was 4 a.m. by the time everything was done and dusted. Before our killer could get his well-earned rest, there was a knock at the door.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear me. 4 a.m.? Who's coming around?
Probably the cops.
4 a.m.?
It seems the neighbors had complained.
4 a.m. Midnight, he sticks
his head. Do the math here.
Midnight, he sticks his head. Hour.
Okay.
That's an hour. This is 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And then, like, he's like, those lines.
Stood for
like,
another hour.
Another hour, yeah. So 2 a.m.
2 a.m.
Murder happens.
10
seconds to crush him with a bed.
10 seconds to crush him with a bed. 2 hours then. Or hour 50.
Let's say a quarter past two.
Yeah.
Now he's chopping him. How long does it take to dismember a man?
I feel like a long time if you don't have bone sores.
Let's say 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, he cut off the legs, arms and head and stashed them under the body under the floorboards.
Okay.
He said there was, quote, there was nothing to wash out. No stain of any kind. No blood spot whatever. I had been too wary for that. A tub had caught all. Ha, ha. Too hard. Exclamation after each.
Ha, ha.
So he dragged him to a tub.
How is he so prepared for everything else but not the actual murder?
Yeah.
And how did he crush him into a tub? That doesn't make sense.
You would have crushed him, made sure he didn't pierce the skin. Mattress, soft.
Okay.
Suffocate?
I guess he suffocated him with his own mattress. This is the most confusing part of this whole story.
What a way to go. But then he is dead. He's chopped up. He's under the floor. But all right. 4 a.m., knock at the door.
Okay.
It was 3 policemen.
Oh, no.
It seems the neighbors had complained.
They heard the heart.
Not about the loud heartbeat, but because of the loud shriek that they'd heard.
Oh, okay.
At, you know, 2 a.m. or whatever. Mm-hmm. Our cocky killer, feeling he had nothing to worry about, simply told the men it was a noise he'd made while sleeping before inviting the men inside to have a look around. He told them the old man was away in the country and invited them into his room to show that nothing was missing and everything was fine, which is hard to prove. They've never been here before. Everything is where it should be.
Just take my word for it. I like the idea of him being like, come in, and the cops being like, it's 4 a.m. No. We got places to
look,
be.
Look at this room. One would not murder a person here at all. I mean, could you even conceive of the idea?
If 10 minutes ago I'd chopped up a body in here, wouldn't there be blood on the floor?
And nary a spot for and I just shriek all the time as I sleep. I scream away.
In his arrogance, he actually brought in some chairs for them to sit on in the room where he'd killed the man with the body directly underneath them under the floorboards.
Okay.
The officers seemed satisfied and the conversation turned to other things. And just a powwow at 4 a.m. now.
The chat was
Oh, you're a night shrieker, are you? Me too. That's cool. That's
fascinating. Weird you had no chairs in this room. Weird we didn't go to a dining room or a lounge. We're just sitting on floorboards. Yeah. Cool.
Our narrator seemed to be holding court quite well until he started to hear another ringing in his ears.
Oh, no.
A very loud, loud ringing. So loud, he realised it wasn't in his ears. He worried the officers could also hear it, but they weren't reacting. He spoke quickly and loudly to cover up the sound, but it continued to grow in volume. He gesticulated and argued loudly with them just to cover it up. So now they're sitting in chairs, I imagine having a cup of tea, and he's just yelling at them.
Oh, no.
He's arguing about, I don't know, pigs?
He's talking so quickly.
He, quote, foamed, raved, and swore, but nothing.
Mate, don't swear in front of a copper.
He grabbed the chair that he'd been sitting on and dragged it along the floorboards to cover up the sound, but it was still audible.
It's good though, imagining all the cops sitting in their chairs, holding because there's no table, holding their glasses of tea, just in silence watching him stomp just around.
One of them slowly stirring it, like looking at the other cop.
I think we need to see. This is weird. He started to really panic. Quote, was it possible they heard not? Almighty God, no. No, they heard. They suspected. They knew. They were making a mockery of my horror. End quote. So he's doing all this stuff. He thinks they're punking him.
Yeah. Sounds like, look, he might be having a little bit of an anxiety attack.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's stressed.
But not mad.
Not mad.
Just stressed.
Just stressed. Which is a stressful situation. I get it.
We all go through stress sometimes.
Yeah.
Finally, it grew to boiling point and he put himself out of his own misery when he had to confess. The final line of the story is, quote, villains, I shrieked. Dissemble no more. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here, it is the beating of his hideous heart. End quote.
Imagine being the cops sitting in on that, being like, ah, did it again. Solved it.
This was a freebie.
I'd still be like, sorry, what?
What could you possibly be saying?
What are you talking about?
Tear up the planks?
What planks?
Yeah, because I guess there's a scene after this that the story doesn't go into where he has to be like, oh, no, I killed a guy.
Yeah. The planks, I mean these floorboards.
The floorboards underneath you, I put his body in there.
I cut his head and legs off.
Yeah.
And arms.
Oh. So he had this weird eye. It's a hard thing to explain after the moment.
What would you do with your cup of tea? There's no table.
I just put it down on the chair next to you, on the floor, and then you get to the... You'd down it in one.
And they'd be like, but I don't see a murder weapon. And he'd have to explain, I crushed him with his best.
I'll tell you upstairs. I'll show you the murder weapon. Gestures into the room. What?
Well, you know, that is the most insane part of this whole story, sir.
Insane? Mad! No, I didn't say that at all. I just killed him with a bed. That's, you know, I bet you see hundreds of these every day in your line of work.
No.
Sir, absolutely not. This is crazy.
Sure, he didn't just use a knife? No,
that would have made
sense. He had a knife. He had something to dismember.
Yeah. Why use his bed?
Why crush him?
Choke him out.
Anyway, but that's the story. It's quite a short story.
Yeah,
it's quite short.
A lot of
lots going on.
Yeah.
It's got less to it than I remember.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like there's less context than... I'm assuming the thing is that this is one of those stories that, so, like you said, The Simpsons have done it. Like, so many places have done it.
Parodied, referenced.
Mm-hmm. So I think that just mixes into making me imagine it's like a larger story than it is. But actually, it's just a guy kills a fella with a bed and goes crazy.
Yeah.
When I was researching, I think I came across... it's been adapted into full-length films multiple times.
Wow.
How?
You really stretch that out, huh?
It's just not that many characters.
To me, it just sounds very much like Lady Macbeth style. You know what I mean? It's like out damn spot.
Yes,
it just seems very much just like, look, I don't want to like besmirch the good name, but
it feels like he copied.
Right, being driven
by your own guilt.
By murder. You know, absolutely.
Is it a ringing, not a heartbeat?
So at first he hears the heartbeat, and the second time it starts as ringing, gets louder and louder and louder, and he assumes, oh my God, it must be his heart. That's what's taunting me.
Oh, man.
His heart is ringing in my ears.
Yeah, what?
The most recent film is 2014.
Okay.
Rose McGowan stars as a character who, quote, may or may not be real.
All right.
Right.
Well, just like the Telltale Heart.
They got 81 minutes out of it.
I guess it's the kind of story that you could, you know, like if you take the basic ideas of it and add a whole bunch of fluff.
You put the backstory in there.
Yeah.
But that's, for me, that's kind of the intrigue though, because you're kind of like, who is this guy?
Yeah. You're like, how has this guy been working with old Gross Eye for so long?
Yeah.
And it's only now that he's like, I'm getting him.
How much screen time was dedicated to the head going into the room is what I want to know.
That was in real time. Yeah. So 60 of those 81 minutes.
Just a slow. Hey, look, if an actor could do that,
that's
impressive. I'd be very impressed.
It would be kind of captivating to watch like a live person.
Yeah.
Like in a live theater setting, just move so slowly.
It's very unsettling to imagine waking up in bed and seeing coming through your doorway an ear. Being like, is that a hole?
It's like drifting back to sleep. You wake up, bit of a chin.
It just reminds me of that Austin Powers scene with the steamroller.
Yeah.
You see them coming so slowly. You've got so much time to react. Still, you just sit up in bed and wait for them to pull you out and pull it on top of you.
Especially getting out of bed and going up to him as he's coming to me. You all right? He's still moving slowly. I'm going to sneak past you and go to the bathroom.
I need to just, I'll be right back. All right, you keep doing you, buddy.
Damn it. But he's already on the move into the room. He can't turn around now.
For some reason, to me, it makes more sense if he's a snake man.
I imagine him, in my mind this whole time, he's been kind of peering around the door like the Velociraptor in Jurassic Park.
Some kind of reptile.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I'm getting a reptile vibe.
Yeah. It's also interesting that this story, it's like his whole body under the floorboards, not just his big beating heart, which I guess probably doesn't make sense for just his heart to be there, but that's far more visually interesting, surely.
The cops kind of responding to just someone shrieking that quickly is pretty impressive.
Must have been a slow night.
Yeah, three of them go round.
Yeah.
I want to know the cop story. What are they doing?
Well, that's the other 21 minutes of the film. The cop's backstory.
That's weird to give the Telltale Heart just open on an hour of a head coming into a room. And some cops being like, hey, it's crazy that it's a quiet night. Yeah. Oh, someone called in a shriek. End credits. Yeah,
that's it.
The Telltale Heart, kind of.
I think, Zam, you may have hit the nail on the head there when you said that basically implied that he may be an unreliable or untrustworthy narrator with time. Obviously, he's pretty obsessed with not being mad, but he probably is.
What?
No.
Don't know if you saw that coming out.
No, I disagree.
But yeah, you're right. It sounds like the heartbeat he hears is his own heartbeat, and then he has a panic attack.
Yeah, he just freaks out about his crime.
Which, when you put it aside like that, it's just not as spooky.
Yeah,
no. Just a man going through some shit.
He still snuck in. It took an hour to walk into a bedroom.
That's true.
At least he thought it was an hour.
Yeah.
That's the scariest part. The story we briefly talked about is fantastically referenced in The Simpsons episode Lisa's Rival, where Alison Taylor, voiced by Winona Ryder, comes along and is better and younger than Lisa at everything. And then Lisa hides Alison's Telltale Heart-based entry into the Diorama-rama that we talked about earlier. And Lisa is overcome by guilt and the beating of the diorama. By the beating of the diorama, she explodes and says, "It's the beating of that hideous heart." I mean, I think I hear something.
That's great.
Before pretending to find Allison's diorama that she hid under the boards of the gymnasium. Very good.
Classic episode.
Very good.
Oh, man.
Skinner was not impressed by either of their dioramas.
Yes, and she'd done Oliver Twist. Oh, this doesn't deserve to win. And then he is impressed by all the original Star Wars characters that Ralph's brought in.
Chewie.
Han, my favorite Wookiee. They're all here.
That's so good.
So, so good. So, before we move on to the next one, score out of 5, I always ask.
Okay. I don't know. I want to give it like a 2.5.
Yeah, look, I'm there. I maybe give it a 2.
Yeah. You can do better, Poe.
Yeah.
Cask of Montenegro. That one, that is that him?
Oh, wait, is that him?
This is
Cask of Monticello.
The number one Googled one.
He blocks a fella in a...
He gets him drunk and he gets like... He starts,
we put you in the cellar, idiot.
And he starts like direct boarding boat. Him up or whatever. I think I that story in primary school and it's still chilling.
Oh, it's very stressful.
John Wilkinson, who actually suggested I do a couple of Edgar Allan Poe's, one of his suggestions was cask of Amontillado.
Okay, I don't know where I got either of the words I said from then.
He said that's his... I'm sorry that I didn't do that, John, but... Maybe another time.
It's a classic. Mm. Oh, no, you've trapped me in a wall. Well, you just stay there because it takes a while to break up a wall.
Yeah, that one I give 5. That's terrifying. That's spooky. Right.
But only a 2.5 for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a 2 from you.
Yeah. I know, 2.5 from me, 2
from
Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, Poe.
Yeah. Not that scary.
Not your best work, even though it's your most famous
your
work.
Number one.
Even though apparently other critics look. Just saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think it's when you say it as... A man kills a fella with a bed and then gets stressed. It's just not that chilling a story, you know? Like, I'm sorry, but a man locks a brick and mortars a man up in a...
Terrifying.
That's spooky.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Okay, right. That's fair.
So we've brought it up to nearly a 3 as an average. Nearly.
Oh, sorry, Poe.
Well, he was a critic. He might be. He's used
He'd
to this.
Get it.
He'd understand.
He's cool.
And
lollipop
of a man. Pumpkin head.
Hey, okay, but what do we give the story I remember about someone killing someone with a leg of lamb and making the cops eat it?
Well, that's a 5.
That's spooky.
That's such a 5.
I don't know how.
I mean,
I don't know
where'd, how... she put, where'd she hide a body? Is the whole thing being like, no murder weapon, no crime?
I don't know.
Because, again, that's... There's the dead body, man.
Where's the
but who did
weapon?
It?
You ate it.
I've just Googled it. Better. Lamb to the Slaughter, 1953, short story by Roald Dahl.
Boom! Boom! That's probably from his weird book of short stories about that guy that gets an incredible piece of art tattooed on him and then he gets skinned for the art. It's a good book.
Wow, the story was supposedly suggested to Dahl by his friend Ian Fleming, James Bond creator, who said,
"What a pedigree.
Why don't you have someone murder their husband with a frozen leg of mutton, which he then serves to the detectives who come to investigate the murder?"
Bam. What a story.
I mean, that gets rid of the murder weapon.
Yeah, that's a 5.
What happens to the body?
Don't worry about that. What a story.
Yeah, the cops are so well fed. They're like, hey, I don't even care if you did kill someone.
This man
this
is being
great mutton. Tenderized? I don't know how you tenderize this, but wow.
Beaten to
right
death
off the
by blood. Something blunt
As,
and icy.
Imagine getting beaten to death with a leg of lamb and being like, you're going to feed this to cops. I just
that's
know
that's the worst part about it.
Yeah, look. Mm. I'm glad it was a real story, though.
You're not
a fever dream.
Oh, I wish it had been, because you could have claimed that.
That's true.
You absolutely could have claimed that.
Not anymore. It's Dahl's now.
Mm. All right, so...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's move on to part 2 of the episode where we're going to talk about The Raven.
A classic.
Which is published a couple of years after The Telltale Heart. It's a narrative poem first published in 1845, just 4 years before the author's death.
Ooh.
The poem is broken up into 18 stanzas of 6 lines each. Basically, when you look at it, it's broken up into 18 sections,
okay,
mini verses. Poe first brought the Raven to his friend and former employer George Rex Graham of Graham's Magazine in Philadelphia. Rex Magazine sounds way better.
Yeah, yeah, it's like Graham's Magazine. No. I don't know if I want to read that.
Graham declined the poem, which may or not have been in its final version, though he gave $15 to Poe as charity.
This poem sucks. Go away.
But I feel sorry for you. It's that bad.
It's great that like, he gives it. Because like, we know the he's like, so you've written a story about a raven that comes into a guy's room? Yeah.
Yeah.
Poe. Hey, take this and spend it wisely.
Is that a good idea for a story? What is
it? It's talking. It's a bird, mate. It's
a raven's not scary. You know, it's scary bats.
Yeah.
Vampires. Draculas.
You know,
Poe, here's $15.
Your blood. That's scary.
We ain't scared by this.
Vampires. You ever heard of a ghost? I don't know.
Well, so he got laughed at, basically. But obviously it's gone on to be very famous and widely studied. So this is our first example of poetry on Book Cheat.
Mm-hmm.
Cop that, Shakespeare. I thought because it's quite short, I will attempt to read each stanza or verse and then do a little translation after each.
Sure, yeah, I'm excited.
Now, I'm going to do my best here. Some of these words...
It's okay.
I'm going to shut my eyes and just let you take me on a journey.
All right, and then... After each verse.
We'll come back from the journey.
Yeah, and we'll discuss.
Discuss the journey far. Yeah. Okay. We'll go back and forth. So, a new thing for Book Cheat, but let's give it a crack.
Okay.
Once upon a night... False start. I mean...
Okay. Mulligan.
That was the fourth word that I screwed up. And also, compared to some of the words we're going to say, I usually should say midnight pretty easily.
Yeah. That's a pretty normal word.
All right, let's try again. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. 'Tis some visitor, I muttered, tapping at my chamber door, only this and nothing more.
Wow. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Well done.
I love rapping at my chamber door. Insert terrible beatboxing here.
Oh, yeah.
I love the idea of quit rapping.
Quit rapping, just come inside.
Or just someone just like gift wrapping a lot of gifts outside.
Yeah. Is it for me? I like that he's reading tomes of forgotten lore, but also napping. So like,
They're boring.
It's obviously not that good.
It's great. Gently nap. What is he saying? Nearly napping? What is he?
Nearly napping. While I nodded, nearly napping.
Nearly napping. Not quite there.
He's reading about, like, I don't know, lore, like, you know, like Middle Earth or something. Is he going,
he's
like,
sitting down reading his Tolkien, reading his Silmarillion.
Silmarillion.
Too much
like,
detail, mate.
Yeah, he's like, I should just reread the Hobbit.
The goddess of... She's all.
Oh, my God, is that a tapping? rapping at my chamber door.
The great evil witch? Is that the same person...
I'm going to say that every time someone knocks on the door, be like, 'tis a visitor, nothing more. I need not be afraid.
So again, we have an unnamed narrator having a read, nearly nodding off, and someone has knocked on his door. That's what he thinks.
Sure. Dreaming.
next part. Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. So he's reading to forget about his lost love, person named Lenore.
I miss
Lenore
so much. You know what'll take my mind off this forgotten lore.
Yeah. I get it. Although, like, rhyming Lenore with Lenore, not great. But apart from that, it was very
good.
Embers, the ghost of embers, that line, very nice.
So we know he survives the crow. That's what that stance has told us. Exactly. He lives through this.
Exactly, which is more than, you know, Brandon Lee can say.
Exactly.
And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, that it is, and nothing more.
So he's become afraid of curtains.
Yeah. So then the noise is freaking him out, and he's trying to tell himself, it's nothing. It's all cool.
It's nothing. Don't look at the curtains.
Also, purple drapes. What's he thinking?
That's crazy. For your forgotten law room? No. Your forgotten law room, green, emerald green, or nothing else. Are we imagining the Forgotten Law Room being basically the library that we were talking about at the beginning?
Because We're back in the library, which we are currently.
That's true. Yes, absolutely. Every episode of Book Cheats is done in like the middle of the beautiful, elegant floor.
Oh, you better believe there's a fire roaring in the corner. Presently, my soul grew stronger, hesitating, then no longer. Sir, said I, or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is, I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more. You know the old saying, if someone's napping, don't come a-rapping.
Absolutely.
That's what he's yelled out. And then he opens the door. He looks out. It's darkness. No one's there.
That's great. Sorry, I was asleep. Oh.
Have I been punked?
Have I been Ashton Kutcher's punked?
Ashton, come on, mate.
Where are you? Were you rapping and tapping on my door?
Door knocking?
Yeah, somebody's just been nick knocking.
Yeah. Did you ever do that as a kid?
I never did it, but I had it done to me once. Oh. Yeah.
Did it freak you out, or were you like, someone's nick knocking?
I've been the victim of a nick knock, yeah.
Fair enough.
I think I wasn't that stressed. I feel like a knock at the door is really stressful.
Yeah, no.
Unless you've done a crime.
Yes, unless it's 4 a.m.
Well, what if you're not wearing pants? That's stressful in another way. You go, it's annoying.
Yeah, I'm not gripping my chair in panic. It is good, though, if you imagine this whole time he's pantsless. Take off your pants, pull out your book of forgotten law.
I'm ready to read. Ready to forget Lenore.
Exactly.
Okay, the next part is, deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore? This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore! Merely this, and nothing more. So he's wondering, is this his long-lost love, Lenore? But he's opened the door and nothing is there.
Lenore?
So I guess Poe had heard of ghosts. You
know? Yeah.
What's going on?
Who's out here? I like look, again, it's a poem, but it's just funny how long that stanza is to say, I looked out and there was no one. No one was there.
Also, like,
I heard a whisper in the wind, maybe. Yeah, to me, my ears, it sounded like Lenore. And, like, I was thinking about Lenore because I was, you know, reading some Tolkien stuff. And they did say Tolkien right there, which kind of to me sound a little bit like Tolkien. So I reckon he was like a bit of a Middle-earth fan, just saying.
And also, he's given himself a lot of props there with dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. Come on, mate.
Okay. Especially since his dreams are presumably like, what if a ghost was out here? That's what he's thinking to himself.
I mean, we'd all be thinking that. If we were alone in the library late at night, someone came a-rapping.
I'd be like, tree branch?
Tree branch in my hallway?
Oh, I was thinking like a big, you know, those big windows.
Oh, right. Well, no, because it's at the door.
At the door.
Outside it's knocking door? At my chamber door. Not, I heard a rapping at the window.
Well, is the door leading outside or is it into a hallway?
I assume it's into a hallway.
I'm imagining a hallway, personally.
Oh, because I imagined that, what's a chamber?
Yeah, what's a chamber?
Your chamber door.
Yeah, your chamber door. I think he is in some sort of room within a house.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could be a library type thing. I'm imagining a library too.
I was imagining it goes to directly outside.
Okay. I guess, but no, I would put money on it's a room in the house, your chamber. We'll see.
We will see. To be honest, we won't see.
The poem will not clarify.
It's still open to interpretation.
Right.
The next bit is, back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping, somewhat louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more.
Good wordplay.
Oh, great. Well done, Poe.
So now he's wondering if the tapping is coming from his window, but he writes it off as the wind. Possibly it is a tree after all.
See?
vindicated. I feel like it's hard to mix up a rapping at the chamber door v a tapping on the window.
Yeah, he most was taps
two different sounds.
Yeah, you
he was
hear.
Napping. He was napping.
Yeah, he's half asleep.
Oh, that's a good point.
He's like he's also in. He's probably in a bad mood from a nap. Yeah. You get woken up early from a nap. You're
absolutely.
Not feeling.
He's just like,
huh? Hello.
Especially if it's also at night. Mm. I don't think a nap is ever good at night.
No.
Once you go to bed after the sundown, you got to go to bed till sun up.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. You can't nap any time after like four.
I was gonna say four. If you nap at 5, you've just gone to bed real early.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just way too early. And you're going to wake up at 4 a.m. going, this isn't good.
I shouldn't have napped. You're going to wake up with that nap sweat.
Yeah. Oh. Clearly, like you're wearing your jeans. You shouldn't be. Yeah.
I'm all confused.
Yeah.
You know your mouth feels worse than if you'd gone to sleep for some reason.
You're not under the covers.
No, it's bad.
Curtains are like wide open. Mm. And you're
and you can see sort of outside light, but it's like, you know.
Yeah,
it's
that's not a terrible way to live.
Yeah.
That's why he's lost it.
I'd say.
Open here, I flung the shutter when, with many a flirt and flutter.
Flirt?
saucy bird.
Here we go. Well, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he.
So stately.
Yeah, what a word. Not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mine of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Aww. So he's opened the window, and the raven has flown in without so much of a mark of respect, no bow or anything.
Like the saints of law of yore. That's what he said, you know.
And that's the not the least obeisance, which is a word I definitely Googled. So he just comes straight in and lands on a bust of Pallas, which is another name for Athena, the Greek goddess of wisdom, war, and handicraft. War and handicraft.
That rules.
You need tapestries about war.
I mean, but if you've got the portfolio of war, you don't need handicraft.
No, that's doing nothing for you.
Give someone else. Give that. No one.
Give that to Hermes. What's he doing?
Yeah.
No.
Well, that's kind of like Poseidon has horses for some reason. Yeah, he didn't need horses. He can't do anything with horses.
Exactly. He'd drown horses.
Yeah. He is in the sea. Horses famously a land animal.
Famously.
Famously, they exist on the ground.
Right, Poseidon, you can take the sea, horses. What about eagles? Birds? You like birds?
Take them.
They're all for yours. How about a goat? You want a goat?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Hermes. We could handball. His portfolio was already trade, heraldry, merchants, commerce, roads, thieves, tricksters, trickery, sports, travellers, and athletes.
He's got a lot on his
he's
plate.
He's just your catchall.
Yeah, he could take handicraft.
Yeah, he's misc. He's welcome to it.
What are you the god of?
Misc. Whatever's going.
So basically, a raven's flown in. It's on top of Pallas, a bust, which I assume is made of stone or whatever, above the chamber door, and it's just perched there.
Weird place for a bust.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Can't get up there, can't dust it. Oh, I'm struggling to imagine the layout of this room.
That's a dusty bust.
Dusty
busty. Then this ebony bird, beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly grim and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Basically, that's a long, long, long-winded way of asking the raven, what is your name?
Plutonian shore.
Plutonian, like the shores of Pluto? I have to assume.
What, Poe? It just feels like you had a word count you wanted to try and hit.
It just sounds like he was like, I need. Because did he rhyme shore with shore there?
Or nightly shore and then night's Plutonian shore.
Yeah. Come on, Poe. You're better than that. What is Plutonian?
No.
Yeah. Also, if I'm spooked and I guess if a raven comes in and I'm already on edge, I might be like, who are you? But I'm not going to be like, hey, what's your name? How you doing?
I don't think I'd be...
Hey, Mr. Raven, what's cracking?
Yeah, you wouldn't say, what's your name? And it's just said, nevermore. Yeah, okay.
Not a name.
I've had a bird fly into my house, at least the house I was staying at, and I never stopped once to ask it its name. I was like, okay, buddy, you need help because you're freaking out and scared.
Yeah, to be honest, that is rude on your behalf. Not yourself or ask them their name.
I agree.
Yep. You're right, though. In this poem, really, realistically, our unnamed narrator of this show should just be like, and go get a broom.
Yeah. Get out.
He doesn't know where he is. The raven's confused.
I've been in, you know, a lot of malls where there's been pigeons, and I've never stopped once to introduce myself or ask them their name.
I once had a bat fly into my house, and I had to get it out with a broom. Yeah. Wow. I thought it was a big moth, but it was just a little bat, and it would not. It kept going behind paintings. I was up for like an hour.
big moth, little bat. Jackson Bailey story.
Did it bite you? They have rabies.
Yeah, I just hit it with a broom a couple times and it left.
Wow.
Yeah, it was all right.
Just look.
So you're asking about Plutonian shore. Plutonian, yes. There is a reference to Pluto, the Roman god of the underworld. The narrator, upon first encountering the raven, is amused by its stately nature and jokingly accuses it of having emerged from night's Plutonium shore, which in that context is the border between the worlds of the living and the dead.
Gotcha, I like that he thinks it's a big joke. Yeah. Who's that for?
Bit of a joke here.
Bit of a joke just for himself.
He thinks it's an omen from the underworld.
Yeah, but it's funny to tell that joke to you, to be like, who's is it? Are you from the underworld? When you look around your big empty chamber.
You guys getting this?
This is a funny joke, Lynette.
Anyone laughing?
She's dead.
She's just missing.
Is she missing?
I don't know.
Gone?
She's
left him?
Missing, presumed dead.
Nah, that's sad. Left him at the altar. That's my head.
That's your head. That's your lore.
That's my, yes.
Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door, with such a name as Nevermore. So he thinks the bird is a bad symbol, particularly because the name is Nevermore.
Did he also say that this has never happened to someone before?
Well, mainly because no one's ever put a bust above their chamber door.
It's weird.
It is weird and probably impossible to do.
Absolutely.
So.
I just like he asked him the name and the bird said Nevermore. Now he's assuming that the bird understood him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. That's weird name. All right. Weird name for a bird. Cool.
All right, whatever.
Here's a weird thing that I've just realized about this poem. Because I've heard bits of it before. And in my head, I've just assumed Nevermore is a thing you teach a raven, like hello cocky for a cockatoo. like there's just like, you know, you make an assumption when you're very young and you don't question it until now. That's, I'm like, yeah, you get a raven, teach it to say Nevermore, and this story is just about someone encountering a said raven. I'd like someone to do a version of this where instead of Nevermore, it's a cockatoo saying hello, cocky.
Hello, cocky. Weird name, but okay.
Weird name.
Go with it.
Is this a cockatoo from hell? I don't know. Lenore? Lenocky. Nevermocky.
That's feel a bit like he chose Lenore just as a way to, like, he was rhymes here? What rhymes? Lenore?
Door,
right.
Lenore. Done. Plutonian sure.
Sure, good.
Sure. But the raven sitting lonely on the placid bust spoke only that one word, as if his soul in one word he did outpour. Nothing farther than he uttered, not a feather than he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before, on the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore. So our narrator is saying there, all his other friends have left him, so he's presuming the raven will leave him too.
Great, two presumptions. The raven will leave him, the raven's his friend. Yeah. My new best friend, the raven.
Let me just stop you right there. But the raven has said, nevermore. Is he saying you'll never leave?
This raven is my new best friend. Fella, come on.
Go out more. I understand you're sad about Lenore, but...
But really, a raven is not a boy's best friend.
Started at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken. Doubtless, said I, what it utters, it is only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore of nevermore. So he's saying that the repeating of the word nevermore is freaking out our storyteller. So he tries to calm himself down by guessing that it's the only word the bird knows and that he's just mindlessly repeating it like a cockatoo.
Yeah, is the implication of that he's like, whoever used to own this raven taught it the word nevermore as a joke.
Good goof.
He's trying to say, The surely it used to belong to a depressed owner who was so sad that he must have said the word nevermore so many times that the bird picked up on it.
Okay.
I think he's like, everyone else is as sad and lonely as I am, right?
A little projection there, but that's
like maybe
fine.
He's like, you know, the owner was like a guy who kept getting, you know, like, you know, bullied or whatever. Mm. And it's like, you know, looked in the mirror like, nevermore, nevermore. Yeah, what happened again? Nevermore. Yeah. I'm a big, brave man. Nevermore.
And then his raven nevermore. Was like, nevermore. And he was like, I got to get rid of you. I'm sending you towards that sad guy.
You mocking me? But you making fun of me as well? Nevermore. I said nevermore.
Imagine this scene, like the scene in Taxi Driver. You talking to me? You talking to me, Raven, that I own?
Raven, you making fun of me, Raven? Get out that window.
Samuel L. Jackson, say nevermore again. I double dare you. But to continue, we're over two-thirds of the way through here. But the raven still beguiling all my fancy into smiling. Mm. Straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking that this ominous bird of yore, what his grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking, nevermore. So he grabs a plush chair, a velvet chair. Yeah. This guy's doing all right.
He's got a whole like library chamber, a law room.
Yeah. He pulls up a pew and sits down and thinks, what the hell is this bird talking about? Why does he keep saying nevermore?
Yeah.
So what? He's gone off the theory of him knowing only one word.
He's discounted it. He said, it's garbage. I was an idiot for thinking it. Let's nut this out. Wait, in my mind...
Was it law, L-A-W? Sorry, I'm just imagining me big old nerd. Now I realize law is something else.
No, law.
Oh, okay.
Hello, R-E.
All right, okay.
He's not just a lawyer boning up or whatever. Yeah. For some reason, when I imagine him lying down on the velvet cushion, I didn't imagine a chair. I imagine him getting a plump cushion, putting it down in front of the raven, and then kneeling on it. I don't know why. Come, raven, teach me.
Teach me your ways.
So he's sitting there, and to continue... This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing, to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining, on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press, nevermore. That is o'er as in over.
Yeah, o'er. Like Norwester.
One of Shakespeare's favourite things to include. So basically he sits for a moment in silence on the velvet, wondering about the bird's fiery eyes and what it would feel like if they burnt into his bosom's core. He admits he is sad and that Lenore will never again be able to sit on the cushion as he is.
Aww. He's sad Lenore will never be able to similarly contemplate this raven. Lenore would love this.
She'd be like, man... That bird's inside. What? That's crazy.
What the heck is this raven? What?
Get a broom.
Yeah, why is there a bird in our house?
Why is there a bird in our door bust?
Did you open a fuzzy door? Get him out. Get him out.
Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim, whose foot talls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee, respite and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, oh quaff, this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore.
So is he saying now, like,
seraphim?
Sounds like an angel.
Okay.
So he starts to imagine the air getting denser with a mysterious perfume, thinking that the thickening air was sent from God and angels sent to him to help forget his love, Lenore.
Well, that's sweet that God's looking out for him.
So he thinks this is a godly
sent God sent a raven.
I mean, look, God, you could have, like, hey, brought back my dude.
Maybe or just made it a bit of a clear.
Just make me forget her a little.
Send a raven. This man, this raven is destroying this man's life. Is there a version of this poem from the raven's perspective? I watched a man kneel and look at me. I don't know. This is not outside.
Or it's just four words. It's just nevermore written four times, and that's it. And quaff, oh quaff, this kind of penth and forget this lost and all. That's him thinking about quaffing a drink to help forget his sadness.
Fair enough.
Drink away the memories.
Yeah. Well, get you. Good.
Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent or whether tempter tossed thee, here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore, quoth the raven, nevermore. So just to re-explain that one, it's getting more and more confusing here. Our guy is getting angry now, accusing the bird of being some sort of evil prophet. Oh. The raven remains still and undaunted by his yelling.
Yeah.
He's like, evil prophet.
I'm just a raven fella.
Evil, like, fair enough, like an evil omen, but a prophet. Okay.
And when he says, is there balm in Gilead, that's a biblical reference, which pretty much means, does the future have hope?
Sure.
He's asking the raven.
I like that he's still going. The raven is going to just say nevermore, fella.
Yeah, and he's saying, tell me, I implore, is there hope? Is there hope? And he says, nevermore. Not what you want to hear.
No, I mean, now that you know the answer, you could really stack those questions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Are things going to be not bad? Wait. Nevermore. Damn.
So two of these stanzas to go. Second last one. Be that our word of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked, upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out of my heart and take thy form from off my door. Quote the raven, nevermore. Basically, he's asked the raven to leave him, but
he stays.
He asks if his love will be if he and his love will be reunited in heaven.
The raven obviously does not know,
and the response is not what he wants to hear.
Yeah, the raven is quite oblivious to.
Hello, sorry, I am a raven. What?
Nevermore.
Nevermore.
Now the final stanza.
I just can't wait to see the climax of this poem.
This is 18 of 18.
Any can ravens actually speak?
I believe yes, but clearly I don't know jack about ravens.
Yeah.
So I have in my head
to be like a raven, because like it's a crow.
Nevermore. Is that just what a raven sounds like? Like you're already.
We're hoping you're enjoying listening to this.
I've just googled can a raven talk, and a Mental Floss article has come up saying in captivity, ravens can learn to talk better than some parrots.
What? Oh. That's cool.
Wow, and what I say to that? Nevermore. Okay, final stanza, 18 of 18. Guys, we're nearly there.
Yes.
This is how it all finishes.
It all comes so excited. Together. I'm so excited. I'm going to kill that bird. I just know it.
I'm going to cook it and feed it to some cops.
The beating of that telltale raven.
It was a one-dimensional storyteller.
Yeah.
Okay, here it is. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon that is dreaming. And the lamp light o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore.
I would love if this poem ended with based on a true story.
Finn.
It's just a great... It's great, but it's just so funny that this is the story of a man who saw a raven and got annoyed.
And yelled at it.
Yeah. A captive raven that escaped.
Yeah.
That final stanza there, shifting tense from past to present. The final line reveals that the raven this isn't in the past. That raven is still there now, on the bust above the door.
It's just found a new nest. His
eyes have turned to that of a devil, and he throws a scary shadow on the floor that has trapped our narrator, and his soul shall never be lifted, nevermore. So I imagine he's still there to this day.
Oh, wow.
Man, we mocked him and thought, like, it's just a raven, but actually it was a Satan.
Turns out it was Satan turning up in the form of a crow, as you do.
Man.
It takes a while for this devil bird to, like, reveal its true colors. Like, it lets him, like, kind of go ham for a bit before being like, yeah, I'm Satan. Okay.
Yeah, you're right. You got me. I'm the devil.
Nevermore.
Cover yourself.
Yeah.
same
classic,
bird.
Classic me.
Well, I mean, it's quite... It's
how are we feeling? Was that spooky at all?
I think that's spookier than the telltale heart.
Yeah.
I think everyone knows that feeling of, like, a pretty mundane thing. Like, if you're already in a weird mood and a bird comes into the house... And it's late at night and you're only lit by a fire, as we are now, you know.
Yes. Ooh, sorry, just let me get some more kindling.
Ah, absolutely. Get some marshmallows in here. Everybody's in their gym jams.
Brand.
Oh, that sounds nice.
We just got some cognac we stole from Edgar Allan Poe's grave.
But we all, so I get the spookiness of that. It's got, it's
got something. It's almost like almost, you know, like in Cthulhu and stuff. Yeah. Where it's just like, oh yeah, it's just like that mundane, which ends up being like this eldritch horror.
Yeah, it's a bit cosmic, like, weirdly. Yeah, as stories go.
It's just a bird, but oh no, it's an evil bird. Got me.
But
with
in many
devilness.
Ways, I'm disappointed that it doesn't just remain a bird.
Mm.
I say that with, like, I feel like that would be spookier.
It hasn't transformed fully. It's just its eyes have gone a bit possibly devilish, and then it's casting a bit of a shadow. Yeah.
And again, it's trapped out.
It was napping, so it might just be like
exactly.
I suppose we don't know.
He's just seeing weird things.
He's just spooked by a raven. But I think that's it's like seeing the shark in Jaws. The moment its eyes become red, I'm like, ah, well, you wrecked it.
Yeah, I know. It would have been better if it was more.
You're like ambiguous.
Yeah,
so
and
like,
you could, you know, theoretically, this could happen to you.
Oh no, happened to a friend of mine. And Crellin Poe's the raven.
I know, so I'm asking, would it have been scarier if it was like a dog?
No.
Like it bounced through.
Nevermore.
Nevermore.
Yes, that's
I'd be
way
like,
scary.
I have to show this talking dog to someone.
Oh my God.
Show this Satan dog.
I'm going to get four friends and get a mystery machine. This is going to be amazing.
Is it scarier if it's just a guy? Nevermore.
He knocks on the door. He's like... He's gone.
Nevermore.
And he just comes through the window, just climbing through, climbs up on the bust, perches himself. Nevermore, mate.
Please leave my house.
The broom.
I don't know. I think a raven was the right choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good, that's a scary enough bird.
What's scarier, raven or crow?
Aren't they the same?
No, I think they're different. And in fact, here's the thing I think is true.
Mm.
I think in Australia we have ravens, but we call them crows. But in the rest of the world or England, they have crows, but they have crows, but call them ravens. That's something I feel like I heard once.
Right. What is that riddle about a riding desk and a raven?
What's a raven like a riding raven?
That's the one.
Yeah.
What's a raven like a riding raven?
Yeah. But no, the riddle is... Why is a raven like a writing desk? And it was designed to have no answer, but then riddle experts, and I say that with heavy quotation marks, because I don't believe it's a real career, came in and had an answer. Shade to riddle experts out there.
Why?
Well, I've just jumped on birdsinbackyards.net.
All right. Fantastic.
What is the difference
between
a crow and a raven?
There are six members of the Corvidae found in Australia.
Okay.
The family Corvidae. Corvidae. Five native breeding species and one infrequently self-introduction. Whatever that means. There are three are called crows and three ravens, although there is really little difference.
Okay.
Most Australian species are similar in size and coloration and can be difficult to tell apart. In some cases, identification is aided by the separate ranges of different species. But differences in plumage, habits, and calls offer good clues for distinguishing against them.
Okay, so there's not really much difference.
Yeah.
It could be Quoth the Crow.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Theoretically.
What about a magpie? I think that'd be kind of cool.
Magpies are a little bit scary.
Yeah. You know, they have red eyes.
Well, that's true. Wait, are a crow's eyes red already? Mm. Also, it could be the fire. I like that we've been trying to solve these Poe riddles.
Yeah, we're doing God's work.
Exactly. Imagine a magpie coming in.
Quoth the magpie.
Now, what is this? I am but in England. We have different magpies.
That's
now,
true. Yeah.
This episode, story is also referenced on The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, this whole show is basically Simpsons references explained.
That's good.
Which one I didn't get, which when I was reading to Edgar Allan Poe, is a lot of places where he lived now are now museums around America.
Okay.
But none of his childhood homes exist.
Sure.
So they've all been bulldozed or lost because he moved around a lot as a kid.
He had a sad life.
And
I get
there's one a reference in The Simpsons, which didn't make sense until I read that, which is in Homer's Triple Bypass. He's behind driving behind Hans Moleman, who's transporting a home on the back of a trailer, and it says birthplace of Edgar Allan Poe. and Homer gets angry and rams him, and it goes up a cliff and explodes.
Oh, man, that's great.
I love that they
would have...
I know. Oh, but none of his homes exist.
Yeah. That's amazing.
But I should say, the only... I'm a huge Simpsons fan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolute diehard. The only episode as a kid of The Simpsons that I didn't like was the final portion of the first Treehouse of Horror episode from season 2 devoted to the Raven.
Sure.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, 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 I remember that episode, yeah.
The kids think it sucks. Homer's so scared.
Yeah.
Homer, the Raven, eat my shorts. Yes. Great classic.
Great stuff. Well, now I watched it again today after having read and understood the poem a bit better. Homer plays our narrator, but it's actually read by James Earl Jones. That's his beautiful voice. So if you want to hear it told in the way it probably should be, you should listen to that. Marge is Lenore on the wall and Bart is the Raven.
Okay.
I've got a much deeper appreciation of it now, but as a kid, I hated that. I hated it.
Aww. I think I remember being quite spooked by that one as a kid. I think they just did a good job of making that chamber door and that room look really upsetting.
Oh, yes, it was very nice.
Yeah, it's just like it. I just didn't find it funny.
Yeah, well, it wasn't really. Yeah, I mean, no, like, it still, was, but like it's
still not that funny. But it's one of those jokes where you go, huh, very good. I see. I see what you did there.
Very clever.
Very clever. Good.
Well
sales.
Done, Matt Groening. Well done.
That's all it is. But yeah, no one's
clap
laughing
you on the back.
No one's laughing out loud.
Yeah, exactly. So. Nobody's rolling on the floor in tears.
No, there's no ha ha. Yeah. Exclamation mark! Yeah. Exclamation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I think that is like my main point of reference for Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven is the Treehouse of Horror version. And I don't know if I've ever seen it anywhere else except here today.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, having heard it today, score out of 5, please, gentlemen.
I think I got 4.
Yeah, I was going to say 4 as well.
Yeah,
well,
that was good.
Well, I liked it. There's a lot of good imagery. Look, he repeats himself and like he rhymes, you know, sure with sure a few
but
times.
But he does it a couple times, so maybe it's intentional.
Exactly. It's fine. Andrew, like, there's some really nice like imagery, especially like the ghost of the embers.
That's good.
Yeah, and then we have a Satan bird.
Yeah.
And any story that ends in a Satan bird, good for me.
I like, you know, people making something regular spooky. And they've done it with a raven.
I love a good rhyme going on.
Oh, yeah.
I went to the store. Sure, said I. I love that. One, two. Oh, didn't expect that.
Look out.
It's not at the end of the line. There's a couple within the line. I enjoyed that writing. So I'm also going to give it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, it's good.
So, meaning that this is much more critically acclaimed in our library.
Yeah,
100%.
Than the Telltale Heart.
Yeah, I know. You got to rearrange your pose.
Probably more favorite. Oh, wow.
Go to the P section. Got to turn that big wheel.
Oh, no. I'm going to get crushed.
P is all the way down one end. Oh, no. We'll tie a rope around your waist so it's safe.
Yeah.
It's like spelunking.
But thank you for joining me on that's the Edgar Allan Poe section out of the way. Now, to wrap up the episodes, what I've been doing is shouting out to some of our Patreon supporters.
Sure.
So people support this podcast, Book Cheat, but also Do Go On, my other show with Matt and Jess, which is a lot of fun. And I think I'd like to do one on Edgar Allan Poe.
All right.
Yeah, maybe a spin-off of this. His whole, because it sounds like there's a lot of crazy stuff
life.
Below the surface.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and also Matt's spin-off podcast as well, which is Primates. And so if you want to support this show and all those other ones, you go to patreon.com/dogoonpod. There's just one Patreon for all that kind of stuff. And I've started up a book club on there as well, where I tell people in advance what I'm reading. Because even though that this show is meant to stop you from reading, I've had several people contact me saying, hey, I'd love to read the book before you talk about it.
Fair enough.
Even though I...
Specifically,
the show is, do not read it. No, I'm very happy that people are reading. And I've had a lot of people actually get in contact saying after they hear it, they go out, it's inspired them to read. Someone who is, I wish I had your name in front of me now. One of our Patreon supporters told us in the Patreon Facebook group that the show inspired them to start reading. And this year already, they've read 60 books.
Wow.
No, it's amazing. Before that, they weren't reading Billy at all.
I've read that one book 60 times.
Yeah.
So none of that counts.
Yeah, that counts.
I've read 1.5 and I started the other one last year sometime.
That's rough.
I'm terrible.
You're behind.
God, jeez.
But if you want to get involved, and also another thing I do is I shout out to people to say thanks, and also I read out their favorite book,
fantastic.
We get to judge their choice.
Oh, fantastic.
That's exciting.
I look forward to not understanding or knowing any of these books.
All right.
And I do it in order. I describe a few, so out of order, I describe some random names. And I'd like to thank Detective Herbert Covington.
Look out.
Watch out. Do not invite him in after murdering someone and hiding him under the floor. My favourite book, question mark, I like that. Me? Well, since you asked.
Well, my favourite book. Well.
Probably The Traveller, Volume 1.
Oh.
I've never heard of it.
I don't know what
I can only assume
that
it's
is.
Price.
I hadn't heard of it either, but apparently it's about a time-travelling superhero who has to stop himself from saving his wife in order to create his own origin story.
Oh,
hilarious.
Yeah.
Sounds like a barrel of laughs. Laugh a minute.
Poor wife there.
No, man, that's rough.
Thanks to Detective HC. William Young, favourite book is probably A Clockwork Orange.
Ah, Eggy Weggies.
A book I've never read, me but either. I have seen the movie.
I would like to do it for the show.
Yeah.
I studied it in college, he tells us, mm-hmm. and wrote an essay on it. It's a fantastic novel about how evil can be as necessary to human nature as good, and also manages to create another language in the form of Nadsat. Well, also, the film it inspired is one of my favourites, so he likes it on all
fronts.
He's
a big fan.
That's good, because often people that love the book, you know,
hate
the film.
Time. Yeah.
So thanks, Will. Brian and Laura are a couple of people. I don't know if they are a couple, brother and sister, perhaps. Probably a couple, I'm thinking. Yeah. That, share a Patreon.
Well, maybe, look, you know, husband and first cousin.
Yeah, that's right.
Who knows to say in this crazy little blue marble of ours.
As long as you're both above 18, no judgment.
Get with your cousin. Please do for me.
So they've got two entries here. Favourite book from Brian is probably a trilogy called The Age of Misrule, which is a story about a group of modern day, well, early 2000s, misfits and Celtic mythology.
Cool.
That does sound
cool.
That
sounds all right, yeah. Cool.
And Laura says, my favourite book is Goodnight, Mr. Tom, because it's sad but also hopeful. Goodnight, Mr. Tom was one of the stories that my grade 6 teacher, we used to have this thing where it was at least once a week, but maybe even daily, we'd all sit down, cross-legged on the floor, and she would read a chapter of a book.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we got that, yeah.
You know, I really, and man, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great. It was the best. There's a very formative moment in my childhood there where it was the middle of talk time and there was this kid whose name was Harry. I forget his last name. He was chatting to his friend William. They were sitting behind me. Teacher's reading the book. They're chatting away. Teacher's like, "Hey, Harry, please be quiet." Harry looks at her, says nothing, keeps talking. And that was the first time I'd seen authority questioned because I was like, "You can do that?"
Whoa.
He just did it.
Whoa.
He didn't even stop. She's yelling at him. He's just keeping on going. Changed me forever.
Yeah, now you're in a bad boy for life.
Yeah.
And Goodnight, Mr. Tom was one of the ones that my teacher, Mrs. Williams, read us. And yeah, it stayed with me. It is sad, but also hopeful. I will admit that. It's about a young boy who, in the Second World War, I believe, in England, is sent out to the country to get away from the city because it's being bombed and raided and things. And he has to stay with a man called Mr. Tom. And it's about the journey getting to know each other. And yeah, it's lovely. But also, there are some sad moments in there. So
most stories about the war generally
yes,
are.
Yes, make sure you're in a good place reading, because it can be a little teary, that one. But thanks to everyone that supports the show on Patreon. Really does genuinely make a difference to us and makes it so we could start our spin-off podcast from Do Go On. So if you want to get involved, chuck in even a couple of bucks a month. It is very well received. But guys, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Anytime. It's a blast.
Now, we should
always have a good one.
You guys were on the... do we say this at the start, or was this off-air? You're on the Frankenstein episode. We did say that.
Yes.
If you want to hear more of the three of us gasbagging away, and you haven't heard the Frankenstein episode, that was a lot of fun.
Get on
that
it.
One.
Yeah, it was great.
And if you want to hear the three of us and our other podcast mate, Joel Dusha, talk also about not Frankenstein, but who was it?
Hamlet.
Hamlet, because that's right, because I did an episode with Joel, who also hosts Plumbing the Death Star with you guys, about Hamlet. And then basically someone tweeted saying it's the perfect spin-off.
Yeah.
And it really was. We talked in length, but in the style of your show, Plumbing the Death Star, which is a lot of fun, about Hamlet and some possible...
Trying to survive
it,
I think is what we did.
Alternatives, yes.
How we could make it through ourselves.
Our four-headed beast or four brothers. It was hard to say.
It was unclear.
I had a really good time.
It was great. It was a lot of fun. We didn't.
Yeah, but I've been on a couple of your show, Plumbing the Death Star episodes. The other one, I recently got to talk about Pokemon for about an hour.
Yeah.
And that is one of my favourite things ever. So thanks for letting me do it.
That was great.
Anytime.
Yeah, that
Deep Feather.
Deep Feather, Crumb. Too easy. Tell you how you make it happen. How you make the magic happen.
Oh, but that was good fun. So any other pods and stuff you want to plug at the moment? You've got one show left at the Melbourne Comedy Festival at the moment.
Yes, and if you want to grab tickets, unfortunately, it is all sold out.
Oh, even the final show? Damn! Yes.
Well,
thanks,
bad.
Thanks for coming on anyway. Because this is coming out tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Well, if you want to come, look, try your luck at the door. Maybe you'll get in.
You might be lucky. A couple
people
tickets
might cancel. Be cool to stand, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
It's a lot of fun.
My friends went to see a comedy festival show last night, and there was three of them, two tickets available. They rang up the box office and said, hey, there's two available online. Is there any chance of another one? And she said, well, you could always try your luck. What do you mean try your luck? What, that someone doesn't turn up and then their friend says, hey, blah, blah, like in a medical emergency, go sell her ticket. Like, how are they ever going to get that lucky?
What does that mean? Yeah.
There was definitely going to be one person standing outside the door. But if you bring the show back, sadly, I've been doing my live pod at the same, nearly exactly the same time, so it's been hard to see. So I implore you to bring it back, if not selfishly for me to witness.
We'll do our best.
Yeah, we'll try.
Big deal, and maybe next year's Mikif.
Yeah, keep it in your mind.
Fingers crossed.
Anything else to plug? You have Sandspan's Radio, which is plumbing the Death Star. It's one of your mainstays, but you've got many other podcasts on that network.
We do. We've got Plumbing the Death Star. We've got Shut Up a Second. We've got How Good's Footy. We got Bailey Family Circus. Why Am I Sad? BigSoftTitty.png. Am I missing any?
Did you say D&D is for nerds?
D&D is for nerds. The other one we do. Am I missing any more?
Probably.
That's 6, 7. I think I'm missing 2 more. Whoopsie daisies.
Hey!
Sorry if I missed you guys out.
And the rest.
And
as they say on Gilligan's Island, which was literally 2 more. I've talked about this a lot on Doogon. Literally 2 more people. The Professor and Marianne is all they had to say. And they said, and the rest. Nearly the same amount of syllables. From season 2 onward, they got in the credits, but it was ridiculous.
That's baffling. Yeah, that's really baffling.
And the rest of what we do.
And to be honest, they nearly got off every week because of the Professor. He was a very
integral to Gilligan's Island. I agree.
And Marianne, one of my favourite characters, so they were absolutely robbed. But I guess that just brings us to the end of the show. One thing I would like to say is if you want to suggest a book or a poem these days, hey, we're open to
anything's
it. That
works, possible,
right?
Yeah.
A play, you can go to a little Google form I've created, which is linked in the description of this episode, probably one of the top links there. You click it, you tell me why I should do a book, and then I'll do it and I'll shout out to you. If you want me to do that.
Sounds good.
Often I get tweets, I get emails, I get Instagram messages, which is really, really nice. But if you want me to remember to shout out to you, you have to fill out the form. Otherwise, it's lost forever.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
Talking about Roald Dahl earlier really made me want to do this for... there's this book by Roald Dahl. I forget the name of it, but the premise is that a man and a woman travel the world collecting the semen of famous people that they then sell to women so that they can have, like, Einstein's baby. It's a wild book.
This is crazy.
It's like one of Roald Dahl's, like, not children's books, and I've read it.
No, still children's
books. And it is nuts. Anyway, I'll suggest that in the doc.
My parents, my mum, librarian. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Oh, my God.
I love to tell people. In the late 80s, early 90s, Roald Dahl came out to Australia, and they went to see him as, like, a speaking engagement type thing, and he strictly said, I know I'm famous for children's books, but this is strictly for adults only. Mm-hmm. Don't bring your kids. Mm-hmm. He turns up. There's kids in the front row.
Ah.
He absolutely cracked it, apparently, and was just cranky for the entire show.
Look, fair enough. He was an interesting man. Like the whole thing about him being a spy and being this,
it was
a
honeypot.
Yeah.
He would travel and he would make love to beautiful Nazis.
And then isn't there like a quote being like, I'm just so tired of making love to beautiful Nazis.
Yeah, he called up whatever his commanding officer was and he's like, I've had too much sex. Please, can I bring me home? And they were like, you're having sex for your country. Stay there, soldier.
Doogon did a report on his life.
Yeah.
But I'm very sad to say that he is also very famous as an anti-Semite.
Yeah. That's a shame.
It's really a person on Doogon that we look up to, that we do a report on their life, and then not many people come out unscathed.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
Look, everyone is bad. It just is one of those things you got to accept. Broderick killed a person. It's fine.
It's crazy. Fine. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll end on that note. Thank you so much for joining me on the episode, guys.
Anytime.
And until next week, I guess we'll say nevermore.
Happy books.
Now let's leave this library.
This
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.